Good morning. I'd like to welcome you to this space, and we'll begin by standing and singing together from the Blue Worship Book number 6, Here in This Place.
Good morning. I'm Yvonne Berge on EMU's Board of Trustees and Chair of the Search Committee for the next president of Eastern Mennonite University. It's been an honor to be here on campus this week at this exciting time in the history of EMU, and what a beautiful week it has been. Students, you are preparing for finals. Thank you for participating in this week's activities. The EMU community is looking ahead to next year and beyond, including celebrating EMU's centennial. These are exciting times. We are grateful for the leadership of Dr. Schwarzentruber, for what he has given EMU, and we look forward to many activities celebrating and honoring all that he has been and done for this community and beyond. Today is another important moment in the journey we are on together. Last spring, when Dr. Schwarzentruber announced his intention to resign, EMU Board of Trustees appointed a search committee with the charge to bring forth a candidate of choice who would be able to fulfill the priority agenda for EMU in the coming years. After an extensive and disciplined international search, and with experienced assistance from Carlos Romero of Mennonite Education Agency, we are pleased to introduce to you today Dr. Susan Schultz Huxman as the candidate of choice for the ninth president of Eastern Mennonite University. Dr. Schultz Huxman is presently serving as the seventh president of Conrad Grebel University College in Waterloo, Ontario. Her professional experience includes serving at the Elliott School of Communications at Wichita State University, as Associate Professor of Communications and as the school's interim and then permanent director. Her full bio and vita can be found on the search committee website, and it outlines her administrative, educational experience, and accomplishments. Today, Dr. Schultz-Huxman will introduce herself, talk to us a bit about the journey that brought her to this place, her passion for Mennonite education, and a bit of her vision for Eastern Mennonite University. After chapel, there will be a brief time to meet and greet Dr. Schultz-Huxman on the lawn outside of the chapel. And also, for those of you who attended a group session earlier this week, you will receive an online survey that we would appreciate you complete before Thursday noon. For those of you who have not attended one of the group sessions, there will be hard copies for you to take with you when you leave to fill out, and please return that to Twyla at the President's office before the end of today. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Susan Schultz-Huxman.
Well, good morning to a very vibrant community at Eastern Mennonite University that I have had the pleasure to interact with since Monday. It has been a full immersion experience for both myself and my husband, Jesse. I have not forgotten how beautiful this campus is, nestled into the Shenandoah Valley, nor have I forgotten Southern hospitality. Having grown up in Florida and North Carolina, began my academic career at North Carolina. And I do think, indeed, Jesse and I have been treated royally with all of the Southern hospitality, and Mennonite community has just been quite overwhelming. Thank you very, very much. I have been asked today to share with you a glimpse of who I am and why I am here. Those are fundamental questions. So with that in mind, I have prepared a few slides that tackle those questions, and I have prepared it in a kind of top five reasons that I'm here today. I will spend a good deal of the balance of my time on this first reason and try to scoot through the other four reasons in the interests of time. The first reason I am here, and it's very foundational to missional leadership, is I have deep family roots in life-changing Mennonite education. It all starts with planting seeds of faithfulness. And that is an important kind of lesson that I want to spend a little bit of time sharing with you three stories about. We know that the oak tree has a special kind of seed, and the acorn must go down a long, long way before there is any other kind of green or branch above the soil. And in a way, my family has similarly forged very strong, deep roots in Mennonite education that eventually bore fruit in Mennonite education. So I want to tell you three stories about that deep-rootedness in Mennonite education. The first story takes place in Kitchener, Ontario, and the year is 1947. I'm not that old, so this story is not about me, but it is an important reason for why I am here, and it has to do with my father. My father was granted special permission as a non-Mennonite to enroll as a transfer student in grade 10 at Rockaway Mennonite Collegiate in Kitchener, Ontario. At that time in the 1940s, his dad, my grandfather, the Reverend A.J. Schultz, was a very well-known Baptist minister in the area. He was a spellbinding storyteller. He had his own radio show, Morning Meditations with the Reverend A.J. Schultz. He also had spent a number of years in Africa working in the mission field alongside Mennonites, so he knew and understood Mennonites. And again, the pacifist connection was important. Well, Rockaway had a special meeting, and they granted the special admission that allowed my dad to be the first non-Mennonite to attend Rockaway. And while at Rockway, my dad had a very persuasive best friend who was a year older, who had gone to Goshen after Rockway, and he said to my dad, "Schultze, you don't want to go to Waterloo Lutheran University where you've got this great scholarship. Come to me, come with me to Goshen College. It's in Indiana." And so, as fate would have it, my dad took a night train with one suitcase to check out this Goshen College in the States. And there he met my mother, a good, smart Swiss Mennonite from Holmes County, Ohio. She was a top-notch student, a debater, and a basketball player at Goshen. And the rest, as they say, is history. Story number two. The place is DeLand, Florida. The year is 1971. Another reason I'm here today goes back to a major family move that my family made in 71 from Florida to Kansas. We're living near Daytona Beach, Florida. I love it. I'm 10 years old. Who doesn't like going to the beach every weekend? My dad gets a call from a college named Bethel College in Kansas, a call from a search committee, and they ask him to become the next president of that college, a college in crisis, a college near collapse. Well, I certainly didn't want to go to the land of Oz and the land of tornadoes and leave the beach, and I promptly threatened to run away, but of course I did not. And we moved. We packed up and moved to the landlocked prairies. My dad served as president of Bethel College from 1971 to 1991, and I came to like Kansas a lot. It's an acquired taste, but it's wonderful. And I found a Kansas gem. I found a Kansas gem there, too, and it wasn't an emerald from the Emerald City, but from a little place in Pretty Prairie, Kansas. His name is Jesse, and he is my lifelong partner and best friend of 33 years. We met at Bethel, and after a brief stint in North Carolina, we spent 20 wonderful years raising our children in Kansas. Story number three. The place is Ontario, Canada, once again. The year is 2010. I received a call from a search committee out of the blue one day in late fall. Only unlike my father's call, this Mennonite college was not in distress. Quite the contrary. It is very, very healthy. And this Mennonite college was not in Kansas or Indiana or Ohio or Virginia, but in Canada. And I can still hear my husband's refrain in those early weeks of processing this call. "But Susan, Conrad Grable is in Canada. It's not here." So why would I consider this call? By academic standards, I was successful and comfortable. I took satisfaction in being well-published, recognized for distinguished teaching, tenured and promoted, and was serving in my eighth year as dean of a school of communication in the largest media market in the state. Plus, I had just been awarded a much-needed sabbatical, and I took some satisfaction in being called what the Chronicle of Higher Education labeled as the subversive 10%. Precious outliers, women in the academy who are married with more than two children, are serving as senior administrators, and have found ways to become tenured and promoted in publish or perish research institutions. Why would I want to leave this comfortable world, especially give up a tenured faculty position with all its job security? More importantly, my husband was very successful. Why would he leave a top management job in the PBS television network, having just won Marketer of the Year, with no firm job prospects in Ontario, not even a work permit? When you add that my children had concerns about this move, including the fact that we would be leaving our oldest daughter behind in college at Bethel, the balance sheet for some people, at least logically, might be no. But my yes answer to Conrad Grable and to serving as its seventh president these past 5 years was embedded in a larger story. I have been blessed with superb education in Mennonite institutions, including Bethel College. My husband and I both believe firmly in the power of faith-based education. And Grable, in a sense, was a university like no other as well for its unique academic and business model in the North American context. And so we have been there, and it's a way to say we have been invested in Mennonite higher education for some time. My father at Rockaway Mennonite Collegiate High School, my two children, Connor and Emily, graduates from Rockaway, at Conrad Grable, of course I am there, and Jess, and my son Connor is a first-year student in biomedical engineering and staying at Conrad Grable. Goshen College is where my parents met, and I have many, many first cousins and aunts and uncles who are graduates of Goshen College, and my daughter Emily is a junior at Bluffton. I will be glad to add Eastern Mennonite University on that screen, and I wish I had two more children to give to Heston and AMBS, and then we would have everything covered. I want to just spend a little bit more time about, again, what this kind of experience, this kind of immersive experience in Christian higher education from an Anabaptist perspective has done for me. I do enjoy very much going into high school chapels, going into churches, speaking at universities, including Mennonite universities, of the power of faith-based Anabaptist education. I often call this the three C's of Mennonite education. And one of the first things that comes to mind here is to think about the counterculture, the connections, and the community. And I want to start with what I mean when I say Mennonite education is counterculture, that it dares to be different. We know that the educational mission of our schools is hard to fit into a particular kind of mold. We are not just committed to rigorous academics. We are not just committed to character development. We are not just committed to service. Those are all fine things, and we do them, and so do our secular state counterparts and other private institutions that don't have a faith-based center. We are not a Bible school. We are not a Christian university that advocates for civic religion, that day in and day out tries to find ways to connect God and the flag and the country and sometimes even the gun culture. It's amazing. We are not those things. And so today, our Mennonite schools dare to be different. They adhere to the idea that a Christian liberal arts education matters precisely because it is counterculture, that it is grounded in the good news of the gospel designed to serve a noble purpose. But risks to taking that counterculture position are everywhere. They're legion. Pressures are everywhere to conform. At the University of Waterloo, we are an affiliate faith-based liberal arts college to the University of Waterloo, the most innovative and the largest well-recognized comprehensive research university in Canada. 2 years ago, when the University of Waterloo was welcoming freshmen to the campus, they put up a banner that said just this: it's all about you. So all the freshmen came in, and everywhere they went, they had T-shirts, they had all sorts of things. It's all about you. Well, we at Grable put out our welcoming message that said something a little bit different, and it was a counterculture message. It said, it's all about us together in community. And we even changed the words to a common prayer that we sing at community supper each Wednesday night, the Johnny Appleseed song. We changed that to say, the Lord's been good to us, and so we thank the Lord for giving us the things we need. So again, when we look at what we are competing against in this countercultural cauldron that we live and breathe, we are trying to counter the idea that anonymity is a good thing. We are trying to counter the idea that it doesn't matter how big you grow, bigger is better, bigger is better. These are the mantras that we have in the sort of the regular society. So back to the three C's. Mennonite education matters to all of us, I think, because it is steeped in a faith tradition that values other kinds of things, that it is counterculture. Second, I want to suggest that Christian liberal arts education matters because it forges connections. We are here, again, to find connections everywhere, to connect art and science, to connect theory and practice, to connect values and action, to connect what questions with why questions, to connect the individual with the world, to connect play and work, to connect faith and service. Some of you know of this book, Lauren Pope. He is the author of Colleges That Change Lives. It's now in its fifth edition. And he says the three primary principles of residential liberal arts education are these: critical thinking, moral and civic character, and using knowledge to improve the world. We would add using knowledge and faith witness to improve the world. So again, back to the three C's, from connections to community. Mennonite schools know how to build community. Now, we all know that community is a great word. It's a word like world peace. Everybody likes to say it and smile big when they say it. But community takes on a whole nother kind of dimension, a deeper, more authentic dimension in our Mennonite communities. And again, there is a sense of calling that comes with community. Our sense of belongingness as a group or community is important to well-being. We know that from the psychological literature. We also know that it is in particular short supply these days. Research from the University of Oregon has shown that the number of Americans who feel a sense of belongingness has fallen sharply, has fallen by half since 1976 to today. And this applies to both genders as well as to all ages and educational levels. So here's the puzzle. How can a generation that's equipped with a smartphone and Facebook and LinkedIn and Snapchat have one-third fewer friends than their non-digital counterparts of the 80s and 90s? Well, part of the answer is we are now in what some scholars are calling the post-civic generation. That is the generation that has grown up without much of the way in terms of a larger public life. Belongingness rates begin to plummet about the time that we shifted away from communal spaces like parks, libraries, community centers, and yes, churches, and residential colleges and university. So what can Mennonite schools do about this? I think you know the answer. Community is our middle name. We aspire to practice community because it is a core value. It is in our theology of how to witness shalom, that ancient word that means faith-inspired communities of peace. Palmer Becker, a lifelong Mennonite pastor and educator who has lived many places in the world, including Waterloo, Ontario, and who I have gotten to know very, very well, he captures, in my mind, the simple yet profound insight of shalom from an Anabaptist perspective, namely, that Jesus is the center of our faith, reconciliation is the center of our work, and community is the center of our lives. So these are the three C's of Mennonite education, in my view. And as I said, I will move through these others a little more quickly. A second reason I'm here has to do with the kind of leadership traits that I have had the experience to grow into, and the kind of leadership traits that Eastern Mennonite University was looking for in their presidential profile. One of the things that I think the board knows about me, others do as well, is I love sports analogies when it comes to identifying leadership traits. I played ball all through my young adult life, and I loved playing basketball. I played point guard in high school and college. I don't know how many of you recognize this woman. Does anybody recognize her? Her name is Lynette Woodard, and she was the first woman to play with the Harlem Globetrotters, so that tells you how good of a basketball player she is. And she is from Wichita, Kansas, And yes, I had the great opportunity to play against her when I was in high school at a regional contest. She was amazing. She was 6'2". She could dribble around us. She could dunk and shoot. And it was a very humbling night on the hardwoods. In my letter to the search committee, I wrote about the mindset of a really good point guard. And that is, she seeks to make her team look good. Her most important asset is assists, helping other people score. And her next most important stat is running the floor with the fewest of turnovers. Senior leadership in the academy, I have found, is a lot like that. On a more nuanced look at leadership, we know that good leaders are hard to peg as being either this or that. Jim Collins, author of the book Good to Great, coined the phrase level 5 leadership, which captures that hybrid notion of strong leadership. He also wrote a book called Built to Last, where he said, visionary leaders, like the visionary institutions they represent, do not brutalize themselves with the tyranny of the or. They reject having to make a choice between stability or progress, a healthy bottom line or community outreach, personal humility or professional willpower. Instead, he said, they embrace the genius of the and, the paradoxical view that allows them to pursue both A and B at the same time. And one of the advantages of being in senior leadership positions for quite some time now, 8 years at Wichita State and 5 years at Conrad Grebel, is that people in both institutions have had the opportunity to give feedback on my style of leadership, and these are some of the things that they have said about me, that I encourage and empower people to succeed, that I am relational and results-oriented, kind and firm, an excellent mission-centered communicator, a non-anxious presence, and exhibit joy and a tireless devotion to the college. So this is a second reason I am here. A third is the way in which I have cultivated an academic administrative identity that I hope can still thrive in some capacity here at EMU. The usual path to the presidency involves an academic leaving academic ranks to become an administrator, or a pastor leaving a church to become a president, or a business person leaving a company to become the CEO of a university. So usually one door closes as another door opens. My path has been somewhat different. I have left the academic door open even as I have embraced presidential leadership. So do you recognize this animal? Certainly our biologists do, I think others too. It's a platypus. It is one of the quirkier looking animals in the animal kingdom, at least in my opinion. And so the question that this image is designed to provoke is, should a president still teach and publish and be active in her professional discipline? Can that really work? Is it more quirky and quixotic, like this platypus, than necessary and value added to what a successful president should look like? That is an open question, I think, at EMU, a bigger, more complex enterprise on so many levels. But I will tell you that on balance, this hybrid role has worked for me at Conrad Grebel. These are the two core values that are part of the academic enterprise at Conrad Grebel: inspirational teaching and scholarly excellence. And this was in the job description when I came to Conrad Grebel in 2011. They wanted a president who would model inspired teaching and scholarly excellence. And I found that very, very attractive. And I think it relates again to missional leadership. If you can walk the walk with your faculty, you understand their joys and challenges. This is the only time that you will see a picture of me in this presentation, but it is just simply to acknowledge that in terms of the many types of leadership that are needed at this level, missional, relational, strategic, collaborative, entrepreneurial, and the list goes on, all of these, I think, require impeccable communication qualities. And just to say, I am very comfortable in a church, I am very comfortable in a boardroom, and I am very comfortable in a classroom, as these three pictures show. So the fourth reason I am here is, hey, timing is everything. We all know this is an important principle in our life when it comes to this opportunity. And so there are a variety of both practical and inspirational reasons that I am here and that illustrate the timing is everything. On a practical level, I have had some experience in presidential leadership, and I have come to really enjoy it. Maybe I'm a glutton for punishment, but I have found amazing satisfaction at this level. And so not a greenhorn, the learning curve maybe not quite as high, and was very much reminiscent of the fact that this is what you got 13 years ago when you called Lauren Schwarzendruber from Heston College, and that has worked out well for you. And I wanted to throw this in as a very, very important sidebar, and it was good to hear Yvonne mention Lauren's name at the outset. It has been an enormous, I know it's an enormous responsibility to follow a superb leader in the person of Lauren Schwarzendruber. I have known him for a long time, both in his roles at Heston and at Eastern Mennonite University. I have watched with admiration at the way in which he has led EMU with confidence and conviction, and he has done marvelous things for this institution. And I know it's cliche, but it will be very big shoes to fill here. There are other practical reasons why I am here. I cannot stay at Grable forever. There are term limits that are part of the Canadian context. And I'm here because I was promised by the search committee utmost confidentiality, very important when you're a sitting president at another institution. But on an inspirational level, which is the more important reason, I am here because this is really an attractive position. EMU is healthy by the ways in which I have assessed it initially. It's healthy in terms of academics, financially, spiritually. It is a recognized leader among faith-based institutions, and I think it is a challenge to roll up one's sleeves at this point and to help it become even more prominent as a Christian university like no other. Plus, you add the fact that you're going to be celebrating an extraordinary moment in time. One doesn't want to waste a centennial. They don't come around all that often. We just celebrated our 50th anniversary at Conrad Grable in 2013, and it was a marvelous opportunity to celebrate 50 events, to celebrate 50 years. It was a time to look back and take sustenance in our mission, to move us forward, and to raise a lot of money. And centennials accomplish all of those things at the same time. The final reason I am here, and I realize I think I'm already 2 minutes over time, is that EMU is a Christian university like no other. It is a university with a stunning vision, a compelling vision, a university on the move in a state that values higher education. And I think it, simply put, is turning heads. More specifically, EMU has capacity. It has scale. As I have mentioned, it's healthy on a variety of different levels. It competes in a very competitive Division III athletics. It's great to be back to with a school that has athletics. Looking forward to that. I don't know if Dave is here. He's already given me all of this EMU gear, shirts and caps and everything to wear. And again, these last 3 days have been beautiful for me in getting a sense of the feel, the passion, the connections that you all have. I'm also quite impressed that EMU is tackling bold questions. What does third-way, faith-infused higher education mean in our world today? How does EMU's distinctiveness of peace-building, cross-cultural engagement, and environmental sustainability, how does that contribute to our road less traveled? Lots of things that we could say. I will say just in close that I have been very impressed by the fact that a kind of shalom ethos reigns here. Values permeate the university experience, peace building, creation care, experiential learning, cross-cultural engagement. These are values that feed the EMU mission to educate students, to serve and lead in a global context. Practices such as bicycling, recycling, gardening, LEEDS gold building designations go a long way to creating this shalom culture. Finally, I have often described EMU as the crown jewel of Mennonite higher education, and I realize that in terms of Mennonite theology, that analogy should be taken lightly. But I do think that EMU is a beacon of light, a standard bearer for how to embrace the genius of the both and. It is big and small. It is traditional and innovative. It is pragmatic and prophetic. And above all, calls us day in and day out to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God. Thank you very much.
A reminder that Dr. Schultz-Huxman will be outside for meet and greet for the next while. I think her next appointment is 11 a.m. Did you want to go as well? Yes. Join me in this closing prayer. God, we're grateful for the opportunity to seek a faithful way forward at this point in our journey as a campus community, an academic institution. Would ask for you to be with us as we blend our stories, the story and vision that we just heard, and also that of each individual here, students, faculty, staff, retirees, community members who care greatly about this place. Grant us wisdom and grace as we move steadily forward to the final steps in selecting our next leader as president. Be with the search committee and all those responding on the survey. May there be a clarity of direction. For this we're grateful and we're thankful. In humility we pray. Amen. Go in peace.